People might say the weather forecast is sometimes a work of fiction. Not me. Weather forecasters listening. A climate science team at Bristol University has delved into the world of fantasy to show what it's doing to predict how our weather might change in years to come. Now, let's ask Dr. Dan Lunt to explain what has been going on. He is the lecturer in climatology at the university. But I've got Richard D. Pancost, who is the director of the Cabot Institute and professor of biochemistry, also with me, in fact, joining me in the studio now. Good morning.
Good morning.
Just explain what you've been doing here then, exactly. This is quite intriguing stuff, isn't it?
Well, a lot of our research is based around looking at different worlds, if you will, in terms of better understanding how our climate system works. And when I mean different worlds, most of our work is looking at past climates. So we look at climates of the Cretaceous when the dinosaurs ruled the Earth and they were much, much, much warmer. So we thought an interesting take to get people to understand why we do that would be to model a completely different fantasy world, and that was Middle Earth, just to show how we can understand some basic principles of climate even on these completely different planets.
Yeah, well, we're completely scientific ourselves, as you can understand as well, Richard. That's why we sent Nigel Dando to the Shire.
Absolutely.
Just to test your theory out, and the weather conditions were fairly similar. So seriously, how you do? You're sort of simulating the climate then. Is that the idea?
Well,
based on what information?
Well, that's right. I think it's based upon two types of information. The first type of information is all the fundamental physics that informs how a climate model operates in the first place. Now, they're not perfect. They're simplifications. We can't model everything. That's what Earth is. Models are by definition simplifications.
Yes.
The other bits of information we put in, whether we're modeling the past or we're modeling the Shire, is we need to put in boundary conditions. We need to make some assumptions about where mountain ranges are, where coastlines are, what latitude and longitude to put those in. And we spend a lot of time thinking about those boundary conditions. But if we have all the boundary conditions and the physics is right,
yes,
climate, we should be able to get to the first order of what climate is like.
Well, or you're kind of assuming what the climate might be like. Is that the worry, that it is a very inexact science in many ways?
Well, when we do these exercises, we're not assuming anything about climate. We are assuming certain fundamental physical principles about how climate works.
Yeah.
And we are we're trying to simplify some very, very complex aspects of climate that are very difficult to model. Or rather, if we tried to model them, it would be ludicrously expensive do so.
And just in a word or two, I mean, how then from these models maybe of Middle Earth, what's the practical application of this? How can this be used for in practical terms?
Well, the main way in terms of this is in terms of Middle Earth, it's to raise awareness of the modeling that we do to reconstruct past climates. And what the goal of that work is, well, Dan goes around and he models the climate.
Yes.
I go around and I look at chemical and biological records from the past to say something about what the climate was like. And then we see if they match. And if they do match, then we think we've got a pretty good understanding of climate.
Yes.
If they don't match, then it challenges us to either think about our understanding of the past or of the models. And the general take-home message is that the models do pretty well if they – but there is some pretty big disagreement in how much the poles will warm.
Oh, the other thing is, if they don't match the pair of you, have a blazing row, and that's the end of the whole project. Perhaps.
We do have a lot of blazing rows.
And just finally, there is an edition, I believe, of the paper you published for Dwarves and Elves.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you can download the English, Dwarvish, and Elvish version. Although, to be fair, on some of the commentary blogs, the grammatical translation of the Dwarvish and Elvish has been questioned by some true Tolkien fans.
Yeah, I've been having a look at it myself, not having read the book, but I had a look at it, and it's on our Facebook page as well.
Great.
There we are. Listen, great to see you, Richard. Thanks very much for coming.
Thank you very much.
Richard D. Pancost, Director of the Cabot Institute.